Here are the stories we're covering this week in the Category 5.tv newsroom. A floating windmill farm off the coast of Scotland is generating energy quite efficiently. A DDoS attack of an unprecedented scale is taking place thanks to an exploit in Memcached. Levi's is switching to lasers in an effort to cut down on the chemical use in the manufacture of denim. And driverless cars are raising some big questions in UK courts as the Law Commission aims to adjust British driving laws to accommodate a future filled with autonomous vehicles. These stories are coming right up. Don't go anywhere.
Whether you shop on ThinkGeek, GearBest, B&H Photo Video, eBay, or Amazon, or even if you want a free trial of Audible, you'll find the best deals and support the shows we produce by simply visiting the shopping sites you already frequent by using the links on our website. Visit category5.tv/partners for the full and ever-growing list and help us create more free content like this show. Thank you for shopping with our partners, and thank you for watching.
This is the Category5.tv newsroom, covering the week's top tech stories with a slight Linux bias.
I'm Sasha Rickman, and here are the top stories we're following this week. The world's first commercial floating offshore wind farm, called Highwind, started sending electricity to the grid last October. Since then, the six-turbine, 30-megawatt installation has been working really well. In fact, Highwind has had a 65% capacity factor over the last 3 months, according to Statoil, the Norwegian mega corporation that built the wind farm off the coast of Scotland. A capacity factor of 100% would mean that the wind farm would be sending 30 megawatts of power to the grid every minute of every day. Highwind's capacity factor exceeds the average capacity factors of many sources of electricity. Onshore wind installations in the U.S., for example, had an average capacity factor of about 36.7% last year. Solar averaged 27%, and hydropower generation was only around 45.2% comparatively. Comparing Highwind's 65% capacity factor in the winter, when winds are blowing at its hardest in Scotland, to the average capacity factor of other renewable installations over the whole year isn't quite fair. We can assume Highwind will have a lower capacity factor in months when the winds are milder. The company says it hopes to bring the cost of floating offshore wind down to 40 to 60 euro per megawatt hour, which is around 50 to 74 US per megawatt hour by 2030. So I want these everywhere.
Windmills that
the floating offshore windmills, right. Right? I want to know, because the onshore ones have had a bad reputation for flight disruptions for birds, whether or not seabirds would be affected.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, a bird's a bird's a bird. Whether it's on land or at sea, there's still the potential of disruption. But what I was actually thinking is, what happens if you've got extreme weather like a hurricane rolling through? How does that impact it?
They actually stop spinning. They lock themselves when the weather gets too bad.
Oh, okay.
And they're self-uprighting so that they won't capsize. But when it comes to the wildlife, you're right. Like, I've heard that birds can be killed by these things.
Right.
And so I had to look into that, because it seems to me, like, anytime I've seen them, these windmills, they look like they're just like this.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize, but, you know, centrifugal force or whatever it is, but these things are huge.
Yes.
And so at the tip of this thing, even though it looks like it's moving really slowly, because they're so big and because it's at the tip, it's moving at more than 120 miles per hour.
Really?
Yeah. So if that hit wildlife, it's not likely to survive, guarantee you. So when it's in a field, they can measure that. They can see, okay, there are X number of dead wildlife at the foot of this thing,
yeah,
to some degree, because scavengers come and take carcasses and things. But so in the water, would that would they lose the ability to measure that and the ability to...
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's my concern. The evidence of this...
I would say, though, I guess to counter that is if we could switch to greener energy,
yes,
we wouldn't be killing as much of the earth and wildlife as a whole.
Sure.
But we might be killing some birds.
That's an argument that I've heard, too, is, you know, is it not... It will probably kill less birds than fossil fuel.
Right.
Right? Because of pollution and habitat destruction and things like that.
Are the winds stronger offshore than they are on? Like, I feel like, how is it that big of a difference?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, if you've got a wind farm on shore, typically there's other...
Oh, structures and things.
Yeah, that are going to block the wind. You could have buildings, you could have trees, whatever. Whereas if you're in the water, you got nothing. Like, that wind's going to blow.
We're here in Canada, so we're pretty shielded. But, you know, hurricanes and things come, and they're huge. You know, it'll be a Category 5. Do you like how I nopped that? I dropped that? It'll be a Category 5 out on the water, but then as soon as it hits land, it drops to a Category 3, right? So, yeah, there'd be much more wind on the water. Thinking of the birds, though, I'm like, will they follow that wind? Will the birds be following the wind? And,
right. That's the only thing that keeps me from really loving this. Like, I want them everywhere.
Couldn't they build some kind of a caging system or or something that scares them away with some kind of shrill noise? I don't know. It must be a way.
A new technique is abusing poorly secured servers and fueling record-breaking denial-of-service attacks, along with notes demanding the targets pay hefty ransoms if they want the debilitating flood of junk traffic to stop. Memcached, a database caching system for speeding up websites and networks, lets DDoS vandals amplify their attacks by an unprecedented factor of 51,000. That means a single home computer with a 100 megabit per second upload capacity from its ISP is capable of bombarding a target with a once unimaginable 5 terabits per second of traffic, at least in theory. Following the discovery that DDoS vandals in the wild were abusing open Memcached servers, researchers last week predicted a new round of record attacks. 2 days later, DDoS mitigation service Akamai Prolex reported the 1.3 terabytes per second attack against GitHub, just slightly topping previous records set in 2016. On Monday, researchers from a separate DDoS mitigation service, Arbor Networks, reported a 1.7 terabytes per second DDoS that also relied on the newly documented Memcached amplification method. Researchers are also reporting that many of the potentially paralyzing attacks are accompanied by a ransom demand, presumably so that the data flood will stop. Some of the attackers who are abusing the servers to deliver DDoSes are including the words pay 50 XMR along with the address to a wallet. As the screenshot below demonstrates, the message is repeated over and over in the payload delivered to targets in an attempt to exhaust the network bandwidth they have available. At current prices for the digital currency known as Monero, 50 XMR is valued at about $18,415. If providers everywhere deployed measures that prevented spoofed UDP traffic on their networks and shut down all publicly available Memcached servers they hosted, the new amplification technique would no longer be available. The new record-setting DDoS reported Monday demonstrates that a significant number of providers have yet to adopt these common sense measures. So, Robbie, can you make a little bit of sense of this one for me?
Well, I mean, it often comes down to server admins who, you know, we've set up servers and we trust that it's just working and maybe it's fallen behind or out of date, or there's, you know, in this case, it's wide open to the web and the exploit exists in the wild. And now that hackers know about it, if you will, they create scripts that look for this exploit. And once they find it, then they exploit it and use it as part of a botnet. And in this case, so if I'm able to send, light through a magnifying glass and it suddenly can burn through paper. It's you're maximizing the effects, right? Yep. So if I'm able to send my attack through one of these susceptible servers and it becomes this massive attack because of the way Memcached is being exploited, then there's no limits to the damage that they can cause, taking down servers and things like that.
See, what bothers me about this is I feel like this is a weekly occurrence. There's always some sort of attack happening. And for some reason, a lot of individual companies who have provide server service are not taking the precautions to update their systems. I mean, you would
this is where the argument comes in. Why is your hosting so much more expensive than the one up the street who's selling it for $6 a month?
Right, because the one for $6 a month could potentially just not be caring to update the service on a regular, ongoing, daily, sometimes hourly basis. But, I mean, we are in a world of internet-driven everything. You gotta take care. It just
as a service provider, especially,
you've
got to watch out for your users.
Like, it's bugging me that this stuff is falling through the cracks, and it's so simple. I kind of have to shake my head and go, well,
if you're a server admin, update your servers, please.
Please
get on some mailing lists. Get on some mailing lists that that reveal these exploits. Like, I use WordPress on a lot of customer websites, and so I am very actively watching WordFence's blog, WordFence's newsletters, and things like that, so that I know what is happening as far as exploits go on WordPress.
Yep.
Sasha, I'm going to throw it back to you.
Levi Strauss is introducing a digitizing technique that uses lasers to ethically create designs on its jeans in place of manual labor. Called Project FLX, which stands for Future LED Execution, the technique will cut out harmful chemicals and reduce labor-intensive steps in producing jean finishes, from between 18 to 24 steps to just 3. Levi is also planning to scale this across the company's denim supply chain. The lasers use infrared to lightly scratch designs into the top layer of the jean surface, creating the faded outlines and tears. Levi says for the past 30 years, the clothing industry has generally used hand finishing and a chemical process to create the worn and faded designs on denim. The company has committed to achieving a zero discharge of hazardous chemicals by 2020 and says it will reduce the number of chemicals used from thousands to only dozens during the denim finishing process with this laser technology. As part of the project, Levi's designers are also using a new imaging tool to create different patterns and finishes on jeans using a tablet to create a prototype. The platform allows designers to tweak colors and control the design of rips and tears. While this isn't new, Eureka Labs reportedly tried to make the 3D graphics more realistic. Prototype jeans are usually created by using chemicals and manually ripping, tearing, or wearing down to a physical pair of jeans. The company states that this new digital tool will cut development in half, from months to weeks and sometimes only to days. Those digital files created can also be sent to the laser machine to create a prototype or even to a vendor for large-scale manufacturing. Levi anticipates that the digital platform will be fully implemented in 2020. Wow. Okay, so this is another really great situation where people obviously are suffering every day with all of these chemicals and all of this hard manual labor, and technology just comes and saves the day with lasers ripping your jeans for you.
There you go. Yeah, I think it's great when technology improves lives. And there are two sides to it. I mean, I don't know all the intricacies of it. You know, the question that Jeff probably is thinking, do jobs get lost by robots?
Nope. Actually, that wasn't going through my head at
thinking?
All.
Okay.
I'm sure you've seen some of the clothes I wear on the show. I'm not very fashion-minded. I like fairly simple outfits. Why do we
make grandpa sweater?
Why do we make clothes to ruin them so we can sell them new?
All right.
I think worn out clothing actually is more comfortable. I would say 97% of my clothes secondhand because I like the comfort of old clothes, and also I like the money savings of used clothes.
Sure.
So I really just love the idea that I imagine if you walked into the building where they are chemically deconstructing genes, like it must be a stench beyond imagine. And that'll just be cleaned right out.
We were talking just before the show even about how I took the kids to an indoor water park and the chlorine was just like burning your eyes. And, you know, you shower it off when you're done. But yeah, I can see that being the case. So if the technology is able to improve the lives of the workers, and really that needs to happen because in the news you hear about how poorly the conditions are for some of these workers. So, you know, I'm all for anything that will improve things for them.
Absolutely. I say go for it. This is great. No issues with it. I just don't understand that ruining clothes.
You don't understand fashion.
I don't understand fashion. I'm not fashion-minded.
The Law Commission in the UK is to conduct a study into British driving laws with the aim of making sure humans can still be blamed for road accidents caused by driverless cars, as well as criminalizing hackers who target autonomous vehicles. The Department for Transport said about the planned three-year review, key aspects will be adjusting traditional laws to reflect the fact self-driving vehicles of the future will not have a driver, perhaps not even a steering wheel like traditional cars, and also consider some of the criminal offenses involved. Insurance companies have already told the government that they will refuse to pay out if autonomous vehicles run up speeding fines, even threatening to pull their all-important support from the autonomous and electric vehicle bill currently before Parliament if they were made liable in such cases. The Law Commission will look at how to allocate civil and criminal responsibility where there is some shared control in a human-machine interface, as well as the creation of new criminal offenses for novel types of conduct and interference. In other words, the hacking of driverless cars. Cyclists have, in all seriousness, suggested prosecuting developers of driverless cars car software for making errors if a cyclist gets squished by a self-driving vehicle. And academics have also questioned whether insurance companies would pay out in a mass driverless car hack scenario. Normally, the Law Commission issues public consultations to inform its work and then publishes a paper summarizing both the responses and its recommendations to the government. No announcement has yet been made about the motoring law consultation. Wow. So I never even thought of that when I was thinking about autonomous cars, but I ride my bike. And what if there was an issue where the car didn't see me?
Yeah, you kind of trust that a human driver is going to see you there.
Right.
But I mean, we've already seen from, I can say it was about 2 years ago, somebody who died while they were playing, what was it, Nintendo Wii?
No, they were watching.
Oh, they were watching Harry Potter or something.
Harry Potter, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, you give humans the ability to chill out a little bit, and they're going to go, I mean, already in the chat room, like, self-driving cars equals more sleep time. I mean, like,
Joe in New Hampshire, hey. Right.
But I honestly, like, when I'm crossing the street, I make eye contact at the cars, like, not the cars, the people behind the cars to make sure they see me crossing the street. Now, I'll be walking across the street trusting, because I can't make eye contact with an autonomous vehicle that they aren't going to go.
I think the autonomous vehicles can be programmed in such a way that they will follow the rules of the road regardless, but then it becomes the biker's issue that, oh, well, I just expected them to stop. I've had pedestrians just walk right out in front of my moving vehicle because they know that I, the human driver, will stop. Now, that's arrogance, and that needs to stop. Because if we're in a world where autonomous vehicles are driving, they may not stop in time. I have a real problem with the insurance aspect of it in that I don't think that insurance companies are insuring me personally so much as I'm paying to have my property insured. I'm paying to protect those around me so that if I cause damage to someone else's property, they are covered. So that, you know, if I bump into your car, you're not out the money for repairing it. That's what my insurance is for. If I'm not in the car, or if the car is driving itself, I think my insurance should still foot the bill for whatever occurs.
Right.
They need to revive their rules in order to accommodate autonomous vehicles, not the laws accommodating the insurance companies who don't want to pay if an accident happens.
That is a super valid point. Yeah, I agree completely.
So do I. I mean, because I work in a major city, the likelihood of a car accident has, for myself, has gone up. I mean, in the 4 years that I've been working there, I've already had one car written off and another one been in the shop. Now, both times, they were not my fault.
Right.
But my insurance company, their stance is, hey, not your fault. We get it. We'll pay for the repair. We're going after the other insurance company.
Right, right.
So why wouldn't the insurance company say, look, if it was, you know, human error in this case where you were semi in control of the car, even though it was driving for you and you were negligent, we got to eat those costs. I get it. But if there was a programming error or there was a hack, the insurance company should be going after whoever created that issue. So I don't see what the big concern is. Now, granted, I'm not an insurance agent. I'm not an insurance broker. I don't get it. I'm not part of that industry. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the whole point is we'll pay. We're going after somebody else. So why couldn't the same here? I mean, if you know, you've got an autonomous car that, you know, has a systems crash, also, you know, you nail
hackers in that case.
Yeah, why wouldn't they go after the company mm-hmm. that made the car then, if that's the case, and say you have some liability?
Sure.
I don't know.
Sasha, I know that we're out of time for the story, and I know you want to wrap up, but the Albuquerque Turkey does raise a very interesting point in that, okay, I'm going to expand on Albuquerque Turkey's comment here and say, look, Sasha, you're biking.
Yes.
Okay? You're walking to and from wherever you're going.
Yes.
You're probably into fitness.
Right.
Okay? You probably are wearing... What do you got on your wrist there, girl?
I have a Fitbit.
You have a Fitbit. Okay. And probably most people these days that are biking or walking, or I'm tracking my steps with my phone, you're tracking your steps with your Fitbits. Why not have a pedestrian transponder within those devices that will protect me from autonomous vehicles so that the autonomous vehicle now doesn't just see me as a person, but sees that digital footprint
recognizes me as a force.
There's a person there. There's someone there. I recognize that that is a Fitbit signal and I need to stay away. What do you think of that?
I actually really love that. It makes me feel a lot safer because I really would love the idea that we could all just have autonomous vehicles and we wouldn't have to rely so much on human judgment in driving when we're all so tired and distracted.
Yeah.
So I love it. Thank you. Big thanks to Roy W. Nash, Senor Wences, and our community of viewers for submitting stories to us this week. Thanks for watching the Category5.tv newsroom. Don't forget to like and subscribe for all your tech news with a slight Linux bias. And for more free content, be sure to check out our website. From the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Sasha Rickman.